Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 152 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, it's the last day of 2024, so I figure this is a good time to recap some of our predictions from earlier this year and see how accurate we were.
I think looking back on 2024 makes sense. January 31st, that works.
Yeah, so we'll get more to the what we thought Bitcoin and Ethereum was going to look like, but let's just kind of recap 2024 and talk about what's happened. And in my eyes, probably the biggest piece of news was the Bitcoin ETFs in 2024. And if you look at what BlackRock did with their IBIT ETF, it has become the greatest launch in stock market history. The expense ratio is, 0.25%, but it's expected to generate $112 million annually with just a 0.25% expense ratio, which is just insane. And I'm sure Grayscale is kicking themselves right now for what they did and jacking their or having their expense ratio so high and never bringing it down and losing so much Bitcoin in their fund.
Yeah, I haven't looked to see how they ended up because I feel like their outflows have kind of plateaued. But they are definitely making less money than they would have if they would have just cut their fees and kept their, I don't remember what it was, a million Bitcoin. I mean, they had a ton. So that's on them. And it's like the other guys knew that this thing was going to be wildly successful, had no problem racing to the bottom on expense ratios and settled at 0.2. And some of them were free for 6 months and all that. And I mean, you and I talked about it. Late 2023 when they had the fake tweet from the SEC that it was going to be approved, and then it was actually approved, and then once it launched, man, it was on. Like, it ramped up to the launch point and it was around 40,000, and then it took off from there and then traded in that 50 to 70 range all year long. I ETFs were huge, man. And I think they continue to be huge. The big banks still haven't approved it. So I kind of seen estimates around 50% of the funds have exposure to the ETFs. And of the 50% that have exposure, some of them have just dipped a toe or a toenail into the water and, haven't done a 2-5% allocation. So the story again next year, along with a couple others.
Well, I mean, it's not even the investment banks that haven't really done much. There's still a ton of retail that hasn't done much. And I mean, the holidays were just happening here for the past couple of weeks for the most part. And it's amazing how many people that I've talked to that are just now getting interested in crypto and Bitcoin and haven't really done anything yet. So, I mean, there's still a huge runway. And we're just talking about the US, not even the rest of the world, because it's just such a small percentage of the entire world that is seriously considering this. And the more you pay attention to politics, I think the more you're like, okay, Bitcoin makes so much more sense compared to everything else, where somebody can control everything else and they can't really control Bitcoin.
Yeah. And, the ETFs are also changing the narrative of, oh, man, they're too risky. I can't stick my neck out and buy it, to it's risky to not own Bitcoin. I need to get my people some exposure to it. So that when that flips and you have people, it's weird to not have Bitcoin exposure, which, I mean, everybody's going to have it when MicroStrategy gets into the S&P 500. Most people have it now that they're going to be in the NASDAQ 100 and the Qs. So to me, it's, the 365 days from today, you and I are going to be like, yep, everything's going better. I do have a bull case that, or a bear case, to sweep the legs out next year, but it's just an unlikely thing. Like, there's just all the tailwinds that we've talked about for the last 18 months are just picking up steam and carrying this thing up.
Well, and the crazy part about all this is one of the big themes that we had for this year that we talked about was going to be regulation. And there's not really been a lot of regulation. It's been kind of this regulation by enforcement. And the SEC has been in the news nonstop, giving out Wells notices to any crypto company that's based in the U.S. They've been in a four-year legal battle with XRP. I think one of my highlights from the SEC was when all five commissioners were talking to Congress and Hester Pierce kind of threw Gary Gensler under the bus in front of Gary Gensler. there's so much going on. Yes, they approved the Bitcoin ETFs. You could say it's been 10 years since this whole all started with someone trying to get a Bitcoin ETF, but it's still, there's not been much regulation. And it's, I think, one of the reasons that there's so much excitement for January 20th is because the next administration is actually talking about how to provide some pro crypto or just some regulation in general, but assigning people as crypto's leads and a committee to kind of focus on what's needed to move this entire industry forward over the next couple of years.
Oh yeah. And when you talk about looking back on the key items on 2024, you know, you got the ETFs coming in that kind of got us into that 50 to 70 range, but then Trump talking at the July Bitcoin conference and talking about holding the 200,000 Bitcoin they have in the U.S. Marshals Department and keeping those and creating a strategic stockpile, and Synthomas having the strategic reserve. If any of those things happen, it's huge for 2025. But in 2024, when Trump won, I mean, that was the catalyst to get us out of that trading range between 50 and 70. And we blew through 80. And, we kind of are stuck in the 90s now, but we got all the way to 108. So to me, that you start combining some of these big events in 2024 and you're stacking some pretty bullish things. And yeah, basically it's wildly clear that and nobody likes Gensler. Like, that's the only bipartisan thing that we've got right now on Bitcoin and crypto, is that Gensler's awful. So he's out. So everybody that Trump has appointed has been pro Bitcoin or crypto. So yeah, I mean, I, as a Bitcoin first guy, the amount of pro crypto may be a little bit of headwind, because as funds flow in, if they're pumping all crypto, you know, some of that's going to get, some of the funds that would go to Bitcoin are going to get into other items. But quite frankly, right now, Bitcoin's so far ahead, I think that it's just going to consume the most funds. Like, the winner's going to win more kind of situation. So, but yeah, Trump winning put it on the list of monster 2024 events.
Yeah. And what's interesting is we've seen a lot of activity actually out of another government organization. The IRS has been very active the past few days. There's a new tax form, the 1099-DA, which I'm assuming is digital assets. It's had several drafts and 44,000 comments. But in 2025, brokers are now going to have to report gross proceeds. And in 2026, they'll have to report the cost basis for certain transactions, which also means decentralized exchanges and NFT marketplaces are not exempt. So none of this should be entirely crazy, but what's interesting is with some of the stuff they have going for 2027, they've seen some, well, there's now been a couple of pro crypto institutions that are suing the IRS and the US Treasury and challenging the rule that classifies DeFi as a broker, which would force DeFi to have some very stringent KYC requirements. And what they're saying is that it's really overstepping legal boundaries and violating the Administrative Procedure Act. So I'm intrigued to see where this goes. I mean, I didn't know government agencies worked at the very end of December, but apparently on the 27th of December, the IRS is pushing this through. So I don't know if this is kind of a last gasp for the anti-crypto army to get something through before things change a lot in 2025 or what, but it's definitely something to kind of keep an eye on. And I don't think anybody expected a ton of change to happen at the end of the year, right before the next administration comes in.
Yeah. So as part of all of that is there's the safe harbor period, which ends today, that I've just looked up enough to try to figure out what I need to do, because there's no organization on the planet that knows my cost basis. Like, I bought stuff on Strike and I buy stuff on Coinbase and then I move it into cold storage, and then they don't know what I bought on either exchange and who I decide to sell it with. So I don't know how on earth they're going to figure that out. But probably the dumbest IRS decision or guidance that I've seen is take a snapshot of your wallets on a particular date and time and keep that as part of you know, your data for your cost basis or whatever for this first in, first out, safe harbor. I'm like, this makes, I'm really good at this. Like, I've paid my taxes on all of my transactions appropriately. I have a spreadsheet that has everything. And I am like, this is dumb. Like, I don't know how to do this. But basically, I think, you know, I keep some of my stack is on the exchanges. And so I'm just going to like swap them. I'm going to move my Strike stack to Coinbase and my Coinbase stack to Strike. And then I guess I'm good. I don't know, man. This is the weirdest. The IRS is getting dumber by the minute. And whenever they go fast, it's worse than when they go slow. And when they go slow, it's not good either.
Well, and this is kind of one of the problems that, I mean, with the lack of regulation and lack of clarity, no one really knows how to treat anything. So people are just kind of throwing darts into the wind and see what sticks. And I think it's going to create a whole mess, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to pay attention to over the next year and see how.
Yeah. I put this in the same category as when they said, hey, if your eBay account does more than $600 or your Venmo does more than $600, then you got to report and da 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 da. Like, and everybody's like freaking out about it. And I'm like, there is no way that this is going to be performed. Like, it's unexecutable. There's so many people that have eBay, PayPal, Venmo, Cash App. They've got 5-6 of these things and they're doing, I mean, $600. If you sell a couple of things on Facebook sale, like your kids' toys they're not using, you get to $600 pretty quick. And so to me, when they were like, yeah, we're not going to actually require that like halfway through the year, I'm like, yeah, that's, you should have just realized that in the beginning. You guys are dumb. And so I think that we're going to have the same situation here. That's why I'm not freaking out and trying to do a bunch of stuff. But, you know, when the IRS does stuff, everybody's got to try to do it. I mean, accountants and fiduciaries are like forced. And if there's, you know, there's people out there that are doing first in, last out, first in, highest out, or, you know, like all of these different accounting procedures, and they use it as a giant bucket because everything's fungible. So you don't know what Bitcoin is what when you put it into a wallet, and you move it back out. So, you know, the IRS just doesn't. It's like the government had to do something, and something was supposed to be better than nothing, but they're wrong. Doing nothing would be way better than that.
Oh, and it's going to be interesting for those people who use CPAs. The CPAs didn't really know anything about Bitcoin to start with, and now you're just making it even more confusing. And I would hate to be a CPA right now trying to figure this out, but
no, really my CPA, anybody else. My CPA knows about Bitcoin and Bitcoin rules because of me. Like, I was the only guy that had any crypto or Bitcoin transactions in 2017 and 18. And so I had to do the research and talk to him and make sure we were doing it right. And he was like, hey, you just send me whatever you sold. Like, don't send me every transaction. Give me the top line. Give me what you sold, the cost basis, you know, if it was long-term or short-term, and then I can do it. And so since then he's got more clients that are into it. But yeah, man, like, he's like, look, you just tell me what you did. So like, you know, the IRS, the CPAs can pick stuff up quick. They're smart. But the IRS passing something like this, especially like, I'm paying attention. I'm on Bitcoin Twitter every day, basically, at least for however long it takes me to go to the bathroom. So if I don't see this safe harbor window situation, I mean, 5% of Bitcoiners are aware of this, and it expires today. So it's not going to work. It's not good. So I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm going to do the minimum action that I need to do and spend the least number of transactions of moving things on chain. And that'll do it for me.
Well, speaking of moving things on chain, one of the other themes that we had for 2024 was going to be the tokenization of real world assets. And I think there was a ton of huge news that happened. Maybe my expectation was it was going to be a lot more, a lot faster. And that's kind of a typical expectation for me in crypto in general. But I mean, you look at BlackRock kind of led some of the space here with them launching. You have other companies like Ondo that have become huge in this RWA space as well. So, I mean, there's a ton of things that are happening. It seemed like every month or so, Franklin Templeton was adding another project they were listing their money market reserve on. So, I mean, I think there's a ton of things happening as far as the amount of people that are using it is still pretty small, but it definitely looks like the runway has kind of been set for the tokenization of everything to continue in the future.
Yeah, and I definitely keep hearing it more and more from serious people, and Larry Fink talking about it. Like, he just makes things happen. Like, when BlackRock moves, it just creates such a wake that stuff just falls in line behind it. I mean, even if you look at the ESG movement that they created, I mean, there was like almost a decade of malinvestment that they created. So if they're behind it, if they're going to push something, it's going to work for a period of time. And, you know, I think, what did California do, the D and on the on-chain stuff? And so, you know, when you see onesie twosie stuff in a category like that, then maybe you're a crypto cycle away from it actually being popular or common. And, you know, we're kind of, I don't know if we're this cycle or next cycle, but like, people are talking about it a lot, and it's not just like the crypto enthusiasts that are talking about it. It's out there in the real world too. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, and it feels like one of those things that you're going to have some real world asset tokens that you've never heard of come out of nowhere and be like real valuable and important in this bull run. And then their stars may shine bright and burn out quickly. And then you might have some older stuff that's like plodding along that has already gotten the black eyes and bruised ribs from the battles of the last couple of bear runs. And they'll actually kind of come out ahead in the longer term. That's just the feel I get across the board of Bitcoin. The same with like the AI stuff. And it's just the crypto bull runs in general. You know, it's just stuff you've never heard of that go nuts. And then some stuff just failed miserably.
And gaming in the metaverse are one of the other things that I brought up that I expected to kind of take off in 2024. And I mean, there's AI in general has taken off. Just look at what happened with NVIDIA's GPUs and what that's kind of driven in the entire industry. I don't know if there's really a metric that we are following on how well it was going to do, but it is definitely there. There's been some great games that have come out that are starting to challenge kind of the rest of the gaming ecosystem. I mean, we were expecting it to happen years ago and thought maybe this is the year, and it's still looking like it's going to take a little bit longer. Although, I mean, even Telegram had some craziness going on with all their tap to earn games. I think even in Russia, you couldn't get massage guns because people were buying massage guns and using that to tap on their phone as much as they could. So, I mean, there's been some crazy stuff going on in that, but it's still not, I think, where we're expecting it to be in the future.
Yeah, I like all of these. I feel like, you know, we're early on stuff. Like, you and I are normal guys that have like one foot in the real world and one foot in the crypto universe. And we're like, yeah, man, this year we'll see some movement on real world assets and AI and da-da-da and gaming. Like, gaming doesn't make sense to why it's taking off in crypto. And I can't imagine what like the hardcore crypto guys are like, why isn't this stuff happening yet? Like, they've got to be frustrated at how slow things are progressing. But if you're, you know, if you're Johnny Six Pack that's like not paying attention at all, but kind of hits the news every once in a while, like, man, this stuff's going fast. So it's all about like your perspective of where you're standing. And like, for me, I don't understand why gaming hasn't incorporated. Like, there's so much in-game currency. Why isn't it just a cryptocurrency? To me, it makes no sense. And whoever does that first, and if Auto in their next release uses crypto in the game, it's over. Like, that's like the BlackRock of the gaming world and everybody jumping in. So if you could get there first and you could have the gaming token where you take your gaming token from Grand Theft Auto, move it to an exchange, and then when you play Fortnite, you can buy skins with the same currency that you had from Grand Theft Auto. Like, the gaming people are going to go nuts for that. I don't know why they haven't done it. I mean, I guess the SEC can't have rules against it. You just go ahead and do it and get sued.
Well, yeah, I think that's one of the problems is there are no rules and everybody's scared to do it. So the companies that are doing it are outside the U.S. right now. I think they do have a couple of projects like that. Portal is one of those. Super is kind of one of those as well. But I think the big thing that we needed to have happen was a lot of interoperability. And we saw a lot of that happen. I mean, even here lately with Bitcoin interoperability, like with Cardano and Sui having a lot more interaction with Bitcoin and ability to kind of go back and forth will open a lot of doors. We talked a lot about zero knowledge and what that was going to do or what I hoped it would do. There, we have mentioned a lot of different projects throughout this year that we're seeing some excitement from zero knowledge. It's still pretty early, and I think things are a little further off. I mean, I kind of called it a 3 to 5 year process, but there's been enough momentum this year that I think it will continue to go down, especially all the privacy that zero knowledge offers for a lot of these places. And you're seeing a lot of that in, from an institutional interest as well. And then NFTs, right? I mean, we talked about in-game currencies or in-game items where if you can turn those into NFTs and be able to trade them on any marketplace, that would be ideal. And while the NFT as a whole didn't really take off like it did a few years ago, I mean, you still have projects like Pudgy Penguins that have hit new all-time highs and are doing really well. So I think there still are certain projects that'll do well. I don't expect every NFT to take off, but as people continue to utilize NFTs the right way, and even Starbucks started using NFTs to all their customers, right? So you're going to see some regular Web2 companies start to use NFTs to entice people to become a bigger player in just the day-to-day use of everything they do.
Yeah, I think that the NFTs, something's going to happen and they're going to work in a small way or something, but I feel like meme coins are this cycle's NFTs. Like NFTs should have came back a little harder. You know, the yacht club monkey guys, their values are back up, and that. But it's not hitting my radar very much at all. That, you know, like 4 years ago, everybody's talking about NFTs. There's all this different stuff and all these different programs. And I think the Pudgy Penguins honestly found like a nice niche to kind of bridge the gap between the real world and crypto. And maybe some things will happen there and things like that. I don't know. I'm not an NFT guy. Like I feel like I'm a Bitcoin guy, attention to crypto, and that NFTs are like another degree of separation from me. So it's like a little bit outside of my world.
Yeah, the one thing that you had brought up as a theme that we would see in 2024 was this normalization of Bitcoin. And we'd see other companies and countries start to utilize Bitcoin a lot more. And shoot, with what MicroStrategy has done this year, there are a lot of people following in their footsteps. And we've been talking about MicroStrategy every week for the last 8 weeks or so. They just made their fifth purchase in December and their eighth straight week of buying in a row. The other day, they bought another 2,100 Bitcoin for $209 million. They're supposed to be going into this quiet period in January where they might not buy any Bitcoin for January, but there's been some insights from Michael Saylor that might not be the case. If Bitcoin's going to be down, they're going to find a way to buy it at cheaper prices.
Yeah, I mean, that was on my list of looking back at 2024, and you got to put MicroStrategy figuring out they don't have to get traditional debt. They can do convertible notes, pay 0% interest, and then just pump their bags full of Bitcoin at 0% and then pay back 5 years later with stock. And then on the backside, they can do $21 billion worth of at the market buying and dilute the shares, but each share gains Bitcoin. Like, it's like very narrow band MicroStrategy walking. And it's definitely like MicroStrategy in the game for 4 or 5 years now, but not like what they did in 2024. Like they're doing something nobody else has done. And oh, by the way, now Marathon is doing the same thing. And you've got, you know, once the miners are hoarding Bitcoin, like Marathon bought as much Bitcoin with their convertible note money as most of the other miners mined. Like they bought what the other miners mined. So if you're another miner, you have to be like, wait a second, why are we mining Bitcoin, selling it to Marathon, who also mines Bitcoin? Pump the brakes. We got to figure this out, because But like everything, if you get there first, there's huge advantages. And Marathon beat everybody, and they're stashing more Bitcoin. And guess what's going to happen? Everybody else is going to jump in too. And you know, you talk about more and more normal investment stuff. So the ETFs made it pretty normal. But you got pensions, like three different pension funds bought Bitcoin, whether it's through the ETF or otherwise. So you got the Wisconsin pension. There's one in Australia, one in the UK. And the one in the UK actually bought Bitcoin and put it on their, put it in custody. So they could sell it on a Saturday if they wanted to. And honestly, they could buy it on a Saturday. But the other two bought an ETF, so they got to wait. So, you know, when you talk about the normalization of Bitcoin, it's definitely getting normal. It's going to, like I said, I mean, we're kind of, I feel like we're getting close to the point where it will be normal to have Bitcoin exposure. It will be abnormal to not have Bitcoin exposure. So I'll put that on a list of wins, even though it kind of is happening here at the tail end of the year.
Yeah. Well, shoot, even Bitwise just released their Bitcoin standard ETF or proposed it, which is going to invest in companies with greater than 100 million market cap that hold at least 1K of Bitcoin in their treasury. I mean, that list is growing, right? So initially that was going to be like one company, and now there's 10 or 12, if not more than that. So, and that's not even the countries that we talked about. We didn't even really talk much about the countries, but when you have countries like Bhutan that now have what, 14, 15,000 Bitcoin, whatever the number is, El Salvador with their 6,000, is like, okay, they're not the big guy anymore outside of the US. US has that 200,000. Germany got rid of their 50,000, which was probably going to come back and bite them pretty soon. If it hasn't already. But yeah, it's exciting to see. We talked about maybe the UAE has like 40 billion. There's somebody out there that's been buying that it hasn't been doxed yet. So, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff happening on the countryside. And once all this starts coming out, it's going to be a race to try to catch up. And especially if this Bitcoin reserve happens next year, then it's going to be an exciting year.
Yeah. And you know, you've got companies that are not crypto first companies buying like Similar Scientific and things like that. They're kind of like, if you're a healthcare company and you look over and the small Similar Scientific stock price is going up, and you got to pay attention to that. Tether bought 7,600 Bitcoin this week, which, you know, they're a crypto first company, but Tether made $10 billion in profit this year, which we say billion a lot on this podcast. And sometimes we say a trillion, but a company making $10 billion in profit with 60 employees is not normal. And so what are they going to do with all that money? Like, they know that the rabbit they're chasing is the return you get when you buy Bitcoin. It would be very difficult to beat Bitcoin's price appreciation. And so I would expect Tether to be buying a lot of Bitcoin and keeping it on the balance sheet. And so, you know, I would expect them in 2025 to be on the list of companies. But man, you talk about a private company making $10 billion in profit, buying 7,000 Bitcoin at a clip. That's something to keep an eye on. And so there's a lot of reasons to be bullish for 2025. The NYDIG just came out. We haven't talked about that. Ross Stevens, if you ever can find a podcast where Ross Stevens is talking, he's a great one, but he doesn't talk. I haven't heard him very much lately. So hopefully they'll get him out more, because they just released information about their utilized insurance float to generate yield on Bitcoin. And I don't know enough about it, but I know enough about NYDIG and Ross Stevens to know that it's not going to be a house of cards, you know, rehypothecated yield disaster. So that I got to spend some time reading about it and figuring it out. But NYDIG, you haven't heard much about them, but they are a company that basically orange pills corporations. And Ross Stevens is bright. So hopefully we'll hear more about him, and I can talk more intelligently about it in the next couple of podcasts, because that's something to keep an eye on, because you're talking about big chunks of money and opening more doors to more funds that are like kind of what Saylor did, you know, billions, $21 billion of bond money that's locked up in fixed income can now get exposure to Bitcoin. And so, you know, that's the same thing for NYDIG. So there's so much to keep an eye on. It's pretty awesome.
Well, and one of the reasons that's becoming such a big deal is one of the other themes that you had mentioned was the whole concept around U.S. debt, interest rates, and inflation discussions. And what Michael Saylor has been able to do is Orangeville, and I'm sure Ross is doing the same thing. Orangeville, a lot of these companies, when they're saying, look at what's happening to U.S. debt, where we're eliminated the cap. So there is no cap anymore. Interest rates are kind of always going to be a big question mark. I mean, that's everybody lives and dies on what the Fed's going to do, a cut or whatever, after they raise the interest rates so high, so fast for so long. And then what that does for inflation, right? I mean, we've taken all the major things out of inflation, so it looks like inflation isn't that big of a number. But when you add back into what everything should be in inflation, the inflation percentage in the U.S. is actually super high. And so finding something that can keep up with inflation is difficult these days. And Bitcoin is probably one of the few things that has been able to outpace inflation, and probably why you're seeing a lot of interest in companies just to take some of the cash they have sitting on their reserves and say, okay, how do we just keep up with inflation or try to beat it a little bit instead of just having our money lose money every single day?
Yeah, I mean, if you had $100 million in your reserves and you made $50 million in profit, $10 million worth of your $50 million in profit, and you don't really get to write that off or anything. It's just, you just lose the buying power. So I think there's enough smart people in at corporations that they can jump in, and then once the smart people jump in, the dumb people will follow. And it's kind of the same with retail, and I mean, yeah, countries probably the same. I mean, like, there's a lot of countries that are run by people that aren't able to make decisions for themselves. They're not leaders. They're in a leadership position, but they're looking around for people to tell them what, and looking around to see what's okay to do. So people will be like, yeah, I'll take the heat. If this doesn't work out, I'll do it. So from a corporate, retail, and nation standpoint, you know, you need those leaders to jump into Bitcoin. And then so to me, there's a lot of reasons why we're going to see a bunch of the stuff that we saw start in 2024 is going to pick up a lot of speed in 2025.
Yeah. All right, well, let's jump into what our predictions were, and we can talk about how right or wrong we were, because there's definitely some being close and definitely some being way off, at least from my perspective. We did a little bit differently, but your range for Bitcoin was between 88K and 138K. I think you talked about the bull being in the mid 200s or even higher, depending on if a couple of crazy things happened. But I mean, the Bitcoin hit 108, so it was almost directly in the middle of your range. So you were pretty much spot on. I think my target was about 100K, so we beat that. But I said 100K-ish, so 8% away seems to be about right. Plus or minus 8% would be a win with the prediction, in my opinion. So I think
that's really good.
Yeah.
When we made those predictions, I think we were in the 30s, like 38K or something like that. So we're predicting basically a triple in 12 months. Like, you know, it doesn't seem
not many people will believe that.
Yeah. So if it doesn't seem like it, like, oh yeah, of course it's 100,000, but Bitcoin was just not, like, we were coming off of like creeping from 16,000 up to 38 over the course of a year. So I feel like that was pretty good. Like, pats on the back all around.
Yeah. Ethereum, I think we differed a tiny bit. Your prediction was that Ethereum will outperform in the cycle, but not this year, which was spot on, right? Well, so far, Ethereum did not outperform Bitcoin. I think Ethereum did about 45% this year, while Bitcoin, I guess right now, is like 119%, right? So Bitcoin's what, more than 2x to Ethereum so far. Will that change? My prediction was that Ethereum was going to outperform Bitcoin, but not by much. If they did a 2.5x, Ethereum would do like a 3x. So I was definitely incorrect there. But we did talk about how we saw and the possibility of an Ethereum ETF happening in 2024, which was kind of crazy considering that, one, the Bitcoin ETF hadn't officially happened yet. And then the crazy part about all that is the Ethereum ETF didn't really help the price of Ethereum at all. Like, it took quite some time before Ethereum's price started moving and before the liquidations and the Grayscale Ethereum Trust slowed down.
Yeah, I would like to retract my Ethereum will outperform Bitcoin this cycle. I'm very bearish on Ethereum now. I don't see it's doing very well, but yeah, that's not a bad gig. I mean, you know, that Ethereum ETF seemed far away. And then it was like, ah, okay, whatever. It was like the least splash of that I could have imagined. And then it really didn't move the needle. And now finally, we're, you know, it's picking up steam a little bit, but it's fine with me. Money that flows into an Ethereum ETF is money that doesn't flow into the Bitcoin ETF and find its way into Bitcoin. So the worse Ethereum does, the better. And honestly, Ethereum's got competition. You've got Solana still somehow being viewed as a alternative, and that Sui seems to be making up some ground and becoming like the new kid on the block. So we'll see what happens with Ethereum. But I'm not feeling great about Ethereum. I think I will be an Ethereum seller if we can get a little pop, and then we'll be a Bitcoin buyer.
Yeah, well, I think you and I differ there. I still think Ethereum will outperform Bitcoin in this cycle, but time will tell. We did talk about Solana. I think you had mentioned that they were probably in a good spot just because of that whole cheaper, faster story that they had. And if you look at Solana, they did about an 88% return this year. At one point, they were about 2.5x return. So they did do much better than what Ethereum did. Everything's kind of come back here lately. The other big one that we mentioned from a smart contract perspective was Cardano. And I think my hope was that some of the stuff from Africa would finally come to realization. And while that didn't happen, they did sign the first constitution for Cardano, and they had over 1 million transactions per second, which I think makes them kind of the fastest, or one of the fastest, if not the fastest blockchains out there. They are up 42% for the year, and at one point were up more than 2x. My other altcoins that you probably know nothing about, Mino is one of the ones that's kind of the smart contracts and ZK all in one. They're down like 57%. So it wasn't great there. Render and Akash were two of the ones that I also liked. They're up 47 and 22% to date, although they were both. Render was up more than 3x at one point, and the cash was up more than 2.5x. So they definitely come back down. And then ICP, Internet Computer, was the other one that I liked. And they went up 70% at one point, but now they're down 22%. So I think the point of all of this is the safe bet is Bitcoin. You're going to have a hard time beating Bitcoin. And if you look at like what actually beat Bitcoin, and if we kind of take out all the meme coins, or I should say most of the meme coins, most of the small meme coins, the big ones, there's only about 5 or 6 or so that were better than Bitcoin. Pepe, which is a meme coin, but it was kind of a huge growth. It went up about almost 1,500%. Sui or Sui was up almost 1,200%. So it was definitely a big one, took off this year. I know it's not really a crypto, but MicroStrategy was up about 450. I think it's down some a little bit at this point. Doge was another one that was up about 342%. XRP had a huge jump, like 286%. And then to compare it all, Bitcoin was at like 118. So there's a handful that did well, and some of those maybe you could see and jump into early on. But at the end of the day, for the majority of people, the majority of what you have should be in Bitcoin, and the rest you can gamble in with whatever you want, but Bitcoin's a safe play.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, like, you got to pick the right horse, and you're like, okay, do I go with Pepe coin, or do I go with the one I've never heard of that I'm hearing more about lately? And like, it's just not the amount of time you have to spend trying to figure that stuff out is like, there's a dollar value on the amount of time you have to spend. And even if you diversify and you go like, you listed one that was like down 22%. If you were down 22% in 2024, that's not good for your organization or your token. Like, this was a year to be up. So, you know, you pick one of those, and your aggregate return on your crypto portfolio, you know, isn't great. So you pick two or three of those in your post, you should have just bought Bitcoin and went and had fun. So, you know, buy Bitcoin and don't even check the price.
Yeah, that's a simple thing. So speaking of Bitcoin, one of the things that I did see, and it's starting today, Israel is enabling 6 Bitcoin mutual funds that while that's great news, I think that's fantastic. They're almost a year late compared to when the US did it. They aren't actually doing spot Bitcoin ETFs. So they're going to be more like futures ETFs almost, where they'll trade once a day. And they have fees ranging anywhere between 1.5% and 0.25%. So I'll be intrigued to see who actually jumps into the ETFs that have 1.5% when there's something that's six times less in fees. But I know the investment houses in Israel have been pleading for this to happen for a year. What's crazy is one of those ETFs is going to be managed by a person or a group that's going to try to beat the Bitcoin price too. So I mean, it's great Israel's getting into it, and I'm sure people in Israel are excited to have access to it. The bad part is it's not a spot Bitcoin ETF, so it's not perfect. I mean, shoot, the ones in the U.S. aren't perfect. We don't have in-kind redemptions, but I guess for them, it's better than nothing. So if you're going to kind of compete or want to be involved in Bitcoin, then it's better to have something close to it rather than nothing at all.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're in Israel and you're getting exposure to Bitcoin this way, you may do enough research to find, oh, I can just custody this myself. I don't need to jump through these hoops.
Very true. So the other thing that I saw, we've talked about Russia, I feel like a lot over the past couple of months, and they seem to be bouncing back and forth on what they want to do in the crypto space. They just banned crypto mining for 10 regions for the next 6 years. To like March of 2031, and it's due to energy consumption demands. What's crazy is they legalized crypto mining back in July with the new law taking effect last month. So in 6 months, they've completely changed course. And I mean, this is a country also that has banned the use of crypto for legal tender for internal payments, but they've okayed it to use as cross-border payments in an attempt to evade the sanctions that they've gotten from the rest of the world for invading Ukraine. So I don't know what Russia wants to do or what they're trying to do, but it's about as clear as mud in Russia right now in terms of crypto and what's acceptable.
Yeah, it feels kind of like China. It's like flip-flop, flip back and forth, keep people guessing. All it does is keep people, companies from starting in your country. Not a great strategy.
And then the last thing that I had on my end, since this was kind of a slow week, was it looks like Do Kwon, who is the CEO of Terraform Labs that lost, what, $40 billion for investors, he might actually be extradited back to the U.S. I think there's kind of a battle between the U.S. and South Korea on which one's going to get him. But he could come back here and face more criminal charges for that whole debacle.
Yeah, and on the other side, you know, I think about 24 is, you know, we kind of put the FTX debacle to bed, like the Three Arrows Capital, all of that stuff is kind of behind us now. So, you know, if they, maybe Do Kwon will be behind us next year and Justin Sun and all that stuff will fade away too. You know, it just seems like it's like from crypto generations past. It's like they're crypto boomers now.
Well, I think the big question mark that at least on Polymarket is SBF going to be pardoned by Biden, since Biden seems to be pardoning everybody under the sun right now?
It'll be wild.
And SBF was like the second largest donor to the Democratic Party. So there's been a history of very large donors getting pardoned. So hopefully it doesn't happen. I think that would be crazy, but it's definitely on Polymarket's betting. If you want to go bet for it, I think it's only like 5% right now. So, but
21.
I wouldn't throw anything out at this point.
If Biden pardons SBF, like, go ahead and close the book on the Biden administration is like the crappiest jerk move administration I've ever experienced in my lifetime, or at least that I've paid attention to the right stuff. Like, that's a crap move. But I wouldn't put it past him. It's like several thousand commuted sentences and pardons.
Yeah. It's crazy. So, well, anything else that hit your radar that we need to talk about?
Oh man, not anything too important. It looked like there were some ETFs that were getting pushed across. Vivek Ramaswamy has a Bitcoin bond ETF that basically tracks the returns of the convertible notes that are being invested into MicroStrategy. So, like, Bitcoin derivative on derivative, I guess. The thing I like about it would be that you've got more opportunity to get into it. You've got more exposure, more awareness that these bonds are investing into MicroStrategy to get Bitcoin exposure. And the more people that know that, the more that gets more mainstream, the more money will flow in. And I'm very much rooting for Michael Saylor, and it would just be hilarious if MicroStrategy does what all these crazy, irresponsibly long MicroStrategy enthusiasts believe, which is we're going to several thousand dollars per share and, you know, $1 trillion market cap. And I don't know that I believe that. And quite frankly, I'm kind of getting more nervous as MicroStrategy balloons, but I'm still pulling for them. So let's see what we can do.
Yeah, I hope it happens. I'd love to see it. But I'm trying to be optimistic or pessimistic maybe at the same time. Realistic, I guess, maybe is the right word. The chances that happen.
Yeah, you got to bounce back.
Probably slimmer than they are. Yeah.
But yeah, like 2024 is a good year. Like, put it, like, you know, on the net, good year.
Yeah. No, it's been exciting. I think I'm intrigued to see what's going to happen in 25 now, because like we've talked about, this has been the most pro administration that we've seen coming in that ever in the history of our time in crypto, where usually everybody's fighting against it. And now we're actually going to have people that are fighting for it, and everything they've done so far seems great, although nothing officially happens until the 20th of January. And then we'll really see if they do any of what they said they're going to do, or if it just becomes typical government and they just sit there and do nothing.
Yeah, but this administration is pro-Bitcoin up front. The previous administrations have been anti-crypto in the you know, on the 20th page of the pamphlet. Like, I feel like Bitcoin's on the cover or on the first or second page for this administration. So, you know, it's tough to be more bullish than me. We'll talk about it more next week. But, you know, whenever things are going super good, that's when the bottom drops out. So, you know, there's always a reason to kind of look out.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to some of the predictions we talk about next week. And
we'll
be the year to see
how wrong we could be. Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, happy new year, Hal. Talk later.
Happy new year. Sounds good.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.